Hi, I'm Antonia, and I'm a midwife.
Hi, I'm Micah, and I'm a midwife.
Hi, I'm Jane, I'm a midwife.
Hi, I'm Savannah, a student midwife.
Hi, I'm Lucy, and I'm a midwifery support worker.
Hello, my name's Gulbano, and I'm a midwife.
Hi, I'm Abby, and I'm a birth centre midwife.
Hi, I'm Jo Tanner, and welcome to the June episode of the RCM podcast. Earlier this month, midwives from around the world came together in Bali for the International Confederation of Midwives Triennial Congress. The Congress was a whirlwind of activity, with no fewer than seven streams every day, and the air thick with the sound of midwives sharing ideas and experiences. With all the pressures and challenges faced by maternity services here in the UK, it's understandable that many of us just focus on what's directly in front of us. But today, we're going to broaden our horizons and take a look at how international midwifery influences practice here, and of course, vice versa.
You know, there's no borders in midwifery. We are all midwives of the world.
Those are the words of Maria Velo Higueras, one of the winners of the RCM International Award. She and fellow Robert Gordon University lecturer Emily Mishoshka, along with colleagues from the Zurich University of Applied Sciences, set up the International Student Midwife Network. The network enables students from around half a dozen countries to share ideas and perspectives. Here's Emily to explain how the network came about.
In 2020, we were preparing for an exchange between students from Zurich and students from RGU, and then, of course, COVID hit. And so we had made contact already with our colleagues in Zurich and, you know, we're really looking forward to working together and having this exchange between the students. So when COVID hit, we thought, well, let's harness, you know, this possibility for students, but in a way that we can maybe, you know, we were all getting used to using virtual platforms and technology, and suddenly that became a really feasible option. And then we realized actually this is a really good way of being able to offer students, as Maria was saying, from all walks of life, an opportunity of being able to exchange and learn and network with other student midwives, actually anywhere in the world, in a way that is inclusive and accessible. And it doesn't matter whether you have young kids at home or whether you have caring responsibilities of elderly parents or whether you have, you know, limited funds. And so it came about because of COVID, but actually it was, you know, that was just a great opportunity of enabling us to see how a digitalization and, you know, having these virtual platforms actually increases accessibility and inclusivity for a greater number of people.
Maria also acknowledged that even without a global pandemic, traveling overseas isn't always an option for student midwives.
We have very packed programs in the UK with midwifery that there's hardly any time left for these experiences. So we actually had a student visiting us in Aberdeen, but we are not able to go and take our students abroad because we simply don't have time or resources to do that.
Getting things started isn't always easy. Sylvia Ammann-Fichter from Zurich University of Applied Sciences shares this team's approach.
We just clicked together with same ideas, same ideals, same philosophy, and we just did it. I just remember with Maria, you know, we were, just go for it. We just do it.
And that's exactly what they did. One of the students involved in the network this year is Zainab Al-Anan. Zainab studies midwifery in Beirut at the first Arab university to join the network.
When we first knew about the ISMN project, they told us that it was an international project. And this motivated me the most because it was my first time that I do participate in such an international thing. And like I told you before that as Lebanese university, we are basically the first Arab university that joined the ISMN. So I thought maybe it will be very great and I would be so proud of myself to be part of it. And, you know, I had only the curiosity to know what is it and what we'll do and maybe what I will learn from it. So I wanted to be part of it and just experience this project.
For Zainab, the opportunity to compare midwifery practice in Lebanon with, say, Germany or the Netherlands is priceless.
I did see the real image of midwife. Maybe in Lebanon, I won't tell you the professional identity, the social identity of midwife, it's not very clear here because the people maybe do not have this much knowledge about what does the midwife do. But when I saw the virgin or the vision of the midwife abroad, this also gave me a push to change this mentality here in Lebanon.
Challenging national perceptions of midwifery is something another network member brought up. Shara Ilanda originally trained as a midwife in Hungary, but struggled with the medicalized nature of maternity care.
Yeah, I moved here and I met with a midwife in London. He was a student midwife and she said I could go into the midwife led unit and see how they work in London. I think it was Queen's Elizabeth Hospital. So I went there, like 3 weeks in, moving to London, immediately finding myself in the midwife led unit as a student. It was just dialogue, but I just decided I was going to go with whatever life presents. And I've seen birth led by the woman rather than being delivered by a midwife in a midwife led unit. And I thought, wow, if we can do it like that, like I really would like to be part of this. Being an international student myself, I thought, like, I have to be part of this. But I just thought, oh my God, it's just perfect. Like, people wanted to travel and learn from other cultures and they don't have the chance anymore. And now no one has the chance because of COVID. And yet we've got a network here that I can join in from my living room and still learn from other cultures. And having experiencing maternity care in Hungary and coming here, experiencing it here, I thought like more cultures I can learn from, better midwife I'll probably be.
Sylvia believes that by bringing international student midwives together, it helps build the sense of community.
And also they realize, you know, this, how is it? It's an old-fashioned feminist way, this sisterhood feeling that you belong to this midwifery family. And wherever you are in the world, there are similar problems, but in different contexts. And to feel that you go this journey together and you're not alone in your little hospital, in your little birthing unit, you belong to this big midwifery family and you go forward to improve the care or the conditions for moms, their newborns, and also families and society, actually. But it gives you so much strength. And I just wish that the students which go out in the midwifery workforce, which is a difficult workforce, which is full of challenges, that somehow they know that they have the strength within them and they have this big family around and all the midwives are working together, that it gives them this strength they can build upon.
And Maria and Emily also have an eye on the network's potential legacy.
I definitely see already lots of potential leaders of our profession. So I can see people who are going to be shining through their careers. So I'm expecting to see some people in leadership roles, some people I'm hoping in politics, some people in research, maybe. This network in a few years' time, we can say that there is a collaborative research group looking at things across countries. So I would like to set up, leave the horizon quite open, because as a student-led project, I think it's important that they decide where they want to take the future careers. But I can definitely see future leaders of the profession.
Who knows? We're maybe seeing students who will take up roles within the ICM, the RCM, the UN, the World Health Organization. Anyway, so that's also, you know, lovely to hear them say some of those things too.
It's good to know that the future of midwifery leadership is so bright. There are few people who know more about that than Franca Cadde. Franca is the outgoing president of the ICM and a huge advocate for working beyond national borders, something which has always been part of her life.
I think it's something to do with my past. I was born in the Netherlands, but I left when I was 6. My parents worked for Dutch Development Aid, so I lived in many, many countries. So I lived in Pakistan as a child, in the Punjab in the north, and in the Sudan. And then I went to boarding school in the UK, which is why I did my training in the UK. So I have a bit of an accent in my Dutch and a bit of an accent in my English. But yeah, so I was brought up abroad and went to international schools. And actually had homeschooling until I was 9. because I lived in a country where there was no school for me at that point. And so I think it's kind of in my blood. Even when I worked in the Netherlands, I did quite a lot of the work for our association, so our Dutch RCM. I worked for them for many, many years, and I did lots of stuff around asylum seekers, female genital mutilation, you know, all that kind of stuff. So even when I was in the Netherlands, I did things that were slightly outside the kind of Dutch lines.
Franca's tenure as ICM president has seen a lot of change. And as you would expect in midwifery, it's not been without its challenges.
It has been an incredible journey. I've really enjoyed it. And it's been hard going as well. It's from all kinds of ways. You know, our organization, ICM, has grown. You were saying, what has changed? ICM over the last 6 years has changed dramatically. And so we've become three times the size. Yeah, we were seven staff when I first came into ICM. We're now 30. And I think that the way we were perceived when I first came into ICM, I got a lot of complaints from partners. Partners were saying things like, you know, you ICM, you're always complaining. You always seem to be the ones that are hard done by, you know, and you don't deliver the goods. You're always too late with your work. You're scruffy. Come on, just deliver the goods and stop complaining.
So, under Franca's leadership, the ICM has been professionalised, and they work hard to be a catalyst in the sharing of ideas. I spoke to her just before the Congress in Bali and asked her what her aspirations were for it.
So I think the Congresses are definitely a place where you can listen to how other countries do things. You can pick up little bits from them, but often not transpose them totally because the systems can be so different. But you can pick up either an attitude or you can pick up a kind of a path that people have taken. You can pick up how other organizations work with women or don't work with women's organizations. I think that's one that we're really trying to push at the moment, to get more and more midwives associations to see themselves as movements with women, because we're a women's movement. We're not really, I think midwifery is a women's movement. So I think that is what you get at those congresses, and that's what we hope. And that's actually what we hear too. You'll hear a lot that you've already heard, and it will be reaffirming. And you'll hear some things that you don't agree with, and that will be reaffirming. And here or there, you might get these little pearls. And it's those pearls that can really be life-changing.
Congress is seen as a real celebration of midwifery. And this is something where Franca believes the RCM really leads the way.
This is something the Brits, but the Royal College does really well. When I compare it to other Western countries, you really stick out in that you celebrate people and really kind of, you have this whole ceremony. And that way you're quite similar to the east of the world, where there is also much more kind of pomp and ceremony. And that pomp and ceremony is a lovely way in which you acknowledge. And it's really great. And you know, in the Netherlands, we hardly ever acknowledge. You know, we kind of just say, just get on with it. You know, none of this kind of sticking out, just get on with it. But you do that. And I think it's beautiful, really beautiful. You can be proud of it.
And it was at our awards last month that Franca received the RCM's honorary fellowship.
It was really honourable to also be acknowledged. That was really lovely. It really touched me, really touched me. And by the way, seeing all the other people being so touched, it was really fantastic. It is so deeply meaningful.
Another of our honorary fellows is Fran McConville, who, like Franca, received her award last month. I caught up with Fran after the ceremony to talk about her work with the World Health Organization.
I've been working internationally since 1984, and the last 10.5 years I've been the midwifery advisor to the World Health Organization. Because the WHO is a membership organization, which means that 193 countries come together every year in May and say to the World Health Organizations, these are our global health priorities. We then support them to deliver that. So as a midwifery advisor, it's been making sure midwifery is on their agenda. And that has been making sure we've had the right evidence and the right research to have the right messages for very busy ministers of health with very few resources who are trying to juggle small budgets to cover huge areas. So there's a lot of work that's political, it's also technical research, and trying to deliver that in countries and develop the support that they need to help them make that happen.
Working in such a vast and vastly important organisation can make it hard to get things on the agenda. But Fran was determined that midwifery and maternity care was not only on there, but near the top.
When I first came into WHO, there have been wonderful midwives working before me, but there had been an 8-year gap. So it had kind of got a little bit lost. Having worked internationally for so many years, was in some very difficult remote rural areas in relief operations as well. It was like, you guys just don't get this. You don't have the midwives there. These women aren't going to survive, and nor are these babies. So it was very much about building alliances across multiple departments, working with, tobacco smoking and pregnancy, and working with our humanitarian teams, as well as my own department on maternity born health. And just highlighting to them that if you just add midwifery into that working group or that expert group, you're going to get a different perspective, because you are maternal newborn health is what you're talking about. And making sure that when we have these very big, fantastic working groups to develop our guidelines, evidence-based guidelines, for example, on intrapartum care, that the midwives in the room speak and are listened to by those obstetricians.
Like so many midwives, Fran is far too modest to take the credit for the way the WHO has shifted its position on midwifery and maternity care. She does acknowledge, though, that the change is palpable.
I saw a shift in the need, the understanding of the need to have the midwife's voice on these panels. And then bit by bit, we built up the donor base, particularly the UK government. I was DFID before, so I had some good contacts, the Swedish government and others, the Americans and so forth. I think once they recognised there was leadership for midwifery and WHO, we were able to do much more. And then we got out some very important documents, a framework for action for strengthening quality midwifery care for universal health coverage, which is full of the evidence, and other documents, and most recently, the Essential Childbirth Care Course. And I have to say, much of that is due to the phenomenal research leadership of the UK and the Lancet series on midwifery, which perfectly came out as I arrived in WHO.
Thanks in no small part to her stewardship, the status of midwifery within the WHO is a lot more secure than it ever has been.
We are now working across UN agencies, partners, obstetricians, paediatricians, economists, social scientists, to develop evidence-based guidance for all countries, high income and low income, on how do you transition to the best midwifery model of care that suits you now, and where do you want to be in 5, 10, 15 years. Now, we've never been able to give that support to countries before. It's a top topic for WHO, and we have to report to the DG regularly, and that should be out within 12 to 24 months. So it's a really good place to be. So going from nothing when I arrived to all this work now, and support from so many people, this is not an individual thing. The team has been fantastic, and working with midwives all around the world to get to this has been a great, great journey, actually.
Of course, working internationally doesn't have to mean working for an international organisation. As Maria from Robert Gordon University explains, being an international midwife takes different guises.
I'm not originally from Aberdeen, as everyone can guess from my accent. So my education as a midwife was in Spain, where I did my nursing degree, and then I became a midwife. And shortly after I finished my education there, I moved to the UK. And I feel that one of my strongest assets as a midwife is the fact that I'm an internationally trained midwife. The fact that I have seen different contexts, and I have seen different ways of practicing, different ways of understanding midwifery, different professional associations, different political environments for midwifery. And I always try to transmit that richness in my classes, but I always feel like, well, I only have a limited vision of where I live myself.
Learning from other contexts, as we heard from Zainab and Shara earlier, is so important as part of our professional development, whether that's a context we ourselves have experienced or hearing from someone else. With ongoing international recruitment, it's worth bearing in mind the richness that that can bring in terms of challenging our perspectives and also enhancing our own practice. But it's not just individual midwives coming to work here. There are many UK-trained midwives who look to work overseas, perhaps in Australia or New Zealand. There aren't many, though, who choose to work in war zones. But that's exactly what Wendy Warrington has done.
So for me, it started when I saw the scenes of all the people back in February, March, queuing to leave Ukraine to cross into Poland. And the women and the children and all the people that were stood there in those really adverse weather conditions, we're talking minus 6-7 degrees. And that really resonated with me. as a mother, as a grandmother, as a midwife. And because I speak Polish, I just felt that maybe I could go over and offer some support as a volunteer, a humanitarian aid worker. I haven't done anything like this before. I've been a volunteer in this country and supported and helped, but I've never done any sort of like in the humanitarian sense. So I decided that if I just go over and see what I could do.
For Wendy, it also felt close to home.
My parents are Polish, my grandparents, that's where my roots are. My dad came over after the war with my grandparents, and my mum came when she was 16. So we have still family in Poland, and I used to travel to Poland a lot when I was a child in the school holidays. My grandfather and my great-grandmother were in Auschwitz. My great-grandmother died there, and my grandfather was liberated from there. When he was a young man, his sister, she died of TB. She was only 13. And he then became a Nazi war hunter and a key witness in the Nuremberg trials against Hitler's men and the Gestapo. So when I heard about what was happening over there, and it's in Europe, and I know there's wars going all over the world, but this resonated with me because it was so close to the Polish borders. It resonated with me about what happened to my family and the fact that I've got grandchildren. And if anything like this happened over here, I would hope that somebody would go to help.
Wendy had made promises to her family that she wouldn't go to Ukraine itself. But a chance encounter with a Polish paramedic led her to cross the border to deliver supplies. That one trip turned into many, eventually ending up in Kharkiv, a city that is firmly in Russia's sights. What she experienced there was extraordinary.
Next thing, it was everybody down there, and you are as safe as you can be down there. And I walked into, it opened up like a town full of makeshift tents. There was people set up with cardboard boxes, people on the steps of the subway. So there's people that are walking, going to work still. And then you've got like this community of people and children that are living in a working subway with the clothes actually hung over the ticket turnstiles. It's so hard for me to describe that what I was seeing. And then on top of that, outside, I've got missiles that are whizzing over, you know, and it's the area's just being bombed.
When she visited processing centres set up by humanitarian organisations for internally displaced Ukrainians, Wendy was surprised to see so little thought given to pregnant women.
When I arrived, and I was working on a medical point, they knew that I was a midwife, but my questions were, what about the pregnant women? There is no pregnant women. I said, there's all these coaches and all these people that come in. I've just been walking around the centre. In the last half hour, I have passed 8 visibly pregnant women. And it wasn't even a question that they were asking. So when you were checking people in, when they were taking the details, it wasn't a question. So that's when I started to like make it my business. I did jump up and down, typical midwife here as it is. I did make sure that my voice was heard. And I did go to the coordinators. I even went to the mayor of the town and insisted that that I was given my own spot inside the centre, which I did get. And because he didn't want me to go, because I think he actually realised, and I was talking to people that were coming around with clipboards, because I had the language skills. So people from like World Health Organization, UNICEF, and sort of saying about these issues that I was seeing that were coming up. There were things around safeguarding, you know, having the rooms for mothers and babies, making sure that they had all the equipment there. Also, if you think about all those people that were there in that situation, also around the hygiene. So then about, if you're thinking about the infant feeding, you know, and around issues like with, you know, with gastric problems, you know, the situation is, in, even if they were for formula feeding, is where they're going to prepare that. Do we have an area for that? Then it then brings you on to the thing about breastfeeding in that situation and about reducing effects. So it was a whole host of things that it raised.
Since then, Wendy has been raising money and securing donations of equipment so that women and babies can receive the best care that they can. She acknowledges that this isn't easy, particularly with infrastructure constantly under threat.
When I went to Prokhorovsk in the Donetsk region a couple of months ago, there was seven hospitals, maternity hospitals, within that area of the Donetsk, Donbass region. Three were in Mariupol. We knew Mariupol had fallen into the occupation by the Russians. So they're gone. The other hospitals, if they'd not been hit, had closed because a lot of staff had left, again, to flee. And then there was one more that was in Kramatorsk that was closed in the week that I was there. And that was only like a small, I would class it as a maternity home, so not a fully fledged unit. So this one hospital in Prokhorovsk was the last remaining hospital for the whole of that region. And it's vast.
When we spoke, Wendy was already preparing for her next trip to Ukraine, during which she was hoping to deliver more much-needed supplies, including an incubator that could be powered by a car battery in case of blackouts. But rather than using this time as a chance to catch her breath, she's been working as a bank community midwife and is keeping her training up to date too.
I'm off to do my prompts and my maternity training tomorrow. That I'm consistently up to date. That's why when I come back, I did give up my substantive role and I work as a community midwife now and banking. And that helps to not only keep my skills updated, but also grounds me.
Not everyone would choose to walk headlong into a war zone. And by Wendy's own admission, that wasn't her intention either. But because of people like Wendy, there are women in the direst of circumstances receiving the care, support, and reassurance that they need. Being with woman, the very definition of midwife, has been at the heart of all of my conversations for this episode. Whether you're developing global healthcare policy or delivering care on the front line, that sense of advocacy, of speaking up for women's needs, is a golden thread. It can feel quite distant when you're simply trying to get through your shift, but it is the tie that binds every midwife and every maternity support worker, wherever they choose to practice and wherever they're from. You can find out more about the International Student Midwife Network in the July issue of Midwives Magazine. And Wendy has also written about her experiences in the April issue of the mag. Don't forget, you can still catch up on all of our previous episodes, including ones on self-care and ones on our RCM award winners, available wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like what you've heard, don't forget to tell your friends and colleagues, and maybe even leave us a little review. But for now, I'm Jo Tanner, and thank you for listening.